Well, his name, of course, means burden bearer. We discovered that last week. And he did have a tremendous burden to bear. Just by way, briefly, of review, as we look at this man, Amos, who lived around 780 to 739 BC. He lived in Israel, in an Israel that had been divided, right? After Solomon, there was a division of the kingdom, and there was a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. Amos lived in the southern kingdom. And it was an unusual time in Israel because they were days of peace. They were days of peace and days of prosperity. The Assyrians had somehow backed off their efforts to take over the land and were not pushing in at the borders. And the country was enjoying peace and wealth and prosperity. Oftentimes, throughout the Bible and throughout history, a nation moves farther from God in times of prosperity. I'm sure that that's something that you have noticed or aware of, but it seems as though sometimes, even in our own personal lives, when things are going well and everything's working, we somehow slip back and forget God or forget that we need Him or forget His Word. And this was the case in the north of Israel, in the northern kingdom. They were not keeping the covenant. They were not keeping the instructions that God gave them, not instructions concerning their worship, that they were to worship the one God in Jerusalem. They set up other altars in other places of the country and had a fake worship. Looked maybe good on the outside, an altar, even some priests, and perhaps saying the right things, but it wasn't true worship of God as God gave them in His Word. They had become wealthy because they were taking advantage of the poor and the less fortunate. They were corrupt. They were cheating. Amos tells us that they were adjusting the scales. Somebody brings in some grain or something they want to be paid, and they put it on the scale, and they were rigging the system. They were immoral and corrupt. But they thought that they were doing okay. They thought they were pretty good. And so in these so-called good times, the Lord sends a man named Amos to bring them a message. To bring the message that you are not enjoying times of blessing, that the day of the Lord is not about to come, the day when you will be rule over all of your enemies and rule over the Gentiles, that if you do not repent, if you do not change your ways, that really in just 22 years, you'll be wiped out completely. This nation, you will not even exist. Because there is a king on the throne of Assyria who is ready to come in, and he will in just 22 years. The land will be devastated, the people carried away. And you will cease to exist. Now, again, we noted last week, what a message. That was a hard one to hear for those people. And it was not well received. So this week, I'd like us to talk about who exactly we looked at his message and the difficulty of that message, but who exactly was this man? This man who carried this incredible burden and had this tremendous message from God. Who was Amos? What was he like? His character? Well, we really don't know much about him. The only time that he's ever mentioned is in the book of Amos. And there's not much there. He begins the book with saying in verse 1 that he is among the shepherds of Tekoa. And so from that we know where his hometown is. We know that he's from the south. We know that he's from Judah. That he's not really a part of the people who he has to go and tell them this oracle and tell them God's word and tell them what's going to happen. He's a foreigner. He's an outsider. I don't think they appreciated that very much. What do you know? You're not from around here, right? Why would God send somebody from another part of the country, another land, really, to come and bring this message? But Amos was from the south. He was from Judah. And we know that that kingdom went on a little longer, right? Because then they fell into sin and idolatry, and it was Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians who came in and took them out, as God predicted. He was from Tekoa. He was a shepherd. A shepherd among the shepherds of Tekoa. And the only other thing that we know about Isaiah comes to us in two verses in chapter 7. It's the only thing that he says about himself. And just let me give you the context of that setting in chapter 7. I'm going to read that in a minute. We said that they took offense at his message. It was not well received. They were offended by it. They were angry by the word of the Lord that he brought to them. The audacity of this man to tell us that we are not keeping God's word. And so they had a priest at Bethel where they had set up one of these phony idols, and the king put a priest in there named Amaziah. And Amaziah comes to Amos and he mocks him. He mocks him. He says, "Oh, seer, flee away. Go back to Judah and prophesy." And this is not really seen in our English Bibles, but the idea that he called him a seer, S-E-E-R, the idea that he used that particular word, he was mocking Amos. He was saying, "Look, there's a group of us prophets here. We're part of the Gilded Prophets. You know, we're a group of prophets. We're in the prophet club. We're with the king. We're appointed prophets. We wear the prophet clothes, right? We have it all. We're the prophets." And he looked down at him and said, "Look, you're a seer, right? You're some fortune teller. Go back home. Tell that stuff to the people of Judah." But here's the thing. Amos was not humiliated by that statement. And Amos gives us two verses. The only thing that we really know about him is what he says about himself after this mockery, after this insult. "Then Amos said to Amaziah, 'I was no prophet, nor a prophet's son, but I was a herdsman and a dresser of sycamore figs. But the Lord took me from following the flock, and the Lord said to me, "Go prophesy to my people Israel. Now therefore, hear the word of the Lord."'" Once again, Amos mentions his being a shepherd. And it's an interesting, again, the English language doesn't get it. But it's an ancient Hebrew word for shepherd, and even today, translators can't agree on the word. Some Bibles will say, "I was a sheep raiser." But Amos uses this particular phrase, this particular word about his shepherding. He uses it to bring clarity. Because shepherds, in many cases, it's metaphorical. A pastor is a shepherd. Some would refer to my position as a shepherd, right? He's a spiritual shepherd. Well, in the Old Testament, these prophets, this special group that Amaziah thought he was a part of, they were the shepherds of Israel, right? They had the training, they had the knowledge, they had everything, and everybody thought, you know, well, yeah, they're the shepherds. Amos says, let me be very clear. I am not that kind of shepherd. I am a sheep raiser. I am a guy that's down there with these stinky, smelly, dirty sheep. That's what I do. I'm not leading anybody. I'm not in anything in the kingdom. I'm down there in the fields. I'm a sheep raiser. And he uses a different word. He wants to be clear about that. I'm down here at the bottom of society. And then he goes on. I was no prophet, nor was I a prophet's son. Now, what he is saying there is that if we look in the book of Kings, 1 and 2 Kings, there will be several times where it will talk about the sons of the prophets. And that is believed to have been a school. A seminary, perhaps, if you will, a modern day, a place for theological training, where somebody would go and they would get their prophet degree. He is among the sons of the prophet, right? Here it is. He'd take that and put that up on his wall. You know, I graduated from here. I'm one of the sons of the prophet. It was a very specific role, a very specific training, and we see it again in 1 and 2 Kings. 5-6 times it's in there about being the sons of the prophet. And so what Amos is saying is, I'm a sheep raiser and I am not of the sons of the prophets. Okay? I have no prophetic training. I have no theological training. I'm a sheep dresser. I'm a sheep raiser and I'm a dresser of sycamore figs. I'm a fig picker. That's what he was. Figs, sycamore figs, were eaten by the poor. They were not a delicacy. And the thing about sycamore figs is that it's not really glamorous work, because you have to get the fruit, you know, it has to be damaged. You have to get in the tree and you get the sycamore and you cut the top, and there are certain things that are very messy and dirty to get the fruit, and it's not glamorous, and it's only stuff that the very poor would eat. Amos wants them to be very clear about who he is, right? He's not humiliated. He's not humiliated that he lacks a professional standing. He takes it as a badge of honor. Because he says, you know what? You know why I'm doing this? I'm not getting any money for this. I'm not being paid. I'm not getting anything from the king. I'm not getting any favors. I'm doing this because it is the command of the Lord. I'm doing this because I'm obeying the Lord. Now hear the word of the Lord. And it reminds us of God's people, doesn't it? That God would take such a message of judgment, of salvation, of the gospel, that God would take such a message and entrust it to people like Amos. That Jesus would take this message and entrust it to people like the disciples, ordinary people, whose hearts are open and desire to serve, who are not bringing attention to themselves, but are vessels to be used for Jesus. This has been a difficult week for me. This week I lost my closest friend, Al. Many of you have heard me talk about Al. Al's been here. Some of you have met Al. We have been friends for 51 years. Since 1971, we've been close friends. We grew up in the same neighborhood, and 8 years ago, I moved to North for sales and found myself, we were back in the same neighborhood again. He was just two blocks away. Wednesday night, he became, took a real turn, and I spent Wednesday evening at his bedside. And Thursday morning, he died, and Friday, we had a viewing, and yesterday I had the opportunity to speak at his funeral. There were, of course, hundreds there. I first met Al actually not in 1971, but in 1968. And Al, I guess, like Amos, was a real outsider. He was someone that was even made fun of because he had, in the 60s, if somebody had a short attention span and they wouldn't sit and listen to the teacher, they wouldn't sit and just work in a book, but they were sort of always going and always running and always doing stuff. You know, in the 60s, they put people in special schools. They had names for them. At least the kids on the street did. But Al was an outsider. We all got on the school bus, but Al had a special little red station wagon that would pick up these kids, these particular kids in the neighborhood. And Al would be among those kids. And he would be made fun of. And in seventh grade, they put him in high school, in junior high, and that's, of course, was when we became the best of friends in 1971. And immediately in high school, in junior high, in seventh grade, he's the youngest person, and he steps into seventh grade, and immediately, you know what happened? Al is winning awards in industrial arts. He's going to state shows. He's going all to all these places. His metalwork, his woodworking in seventh grade is far better than people older than him. And so we knew that Al was extremely gifted. A different intelligence, gifted with his hands. He could drive anything. He could fix anything. He could make anything. In his later years, he got into something called marquetry and was doing really fine woodworking. And he could sing. He would sing in churches. He was rough, a mechanic, all of his life working. His hands were like two baseball mitts. When you shook his hand, it was like grabbing a piece of 40 grit sandpaper. His hands were so rough, and the grease from all those years was ground into the lines of his fingers. Scarred, but he had a big heart. He wasn't polished or fancy. His faith didn't come from books or theology schools. But like Amos, God knew there was something there. Do you know, and we don't have time for this, but if you look in the ESV, if you look in the beginning of it, their comments about Amos, there are paragraphs written that go on about Amos's. The book of Amos is a literary masterpiece. Just because of the language he uses and the way that he structures, and he uses satire, he uses metaphors, and it has a beautiful form, and it is a masterpiece, really. Amos's writing. God knew that there was more to Amos. Now, Al had this thing where, you know, he wasn't the greatest with rhetoric or oratory skills. And at times he would get tongue-tied, okay, and confused when he spoke. And I've told this story yesterday. We were young Christians going door to door in North Huntington. We had the idea that maybe we could plant a church. And we were going to start with a Bible study, a home Bible study. And so we went knocking on doors, Al and I. And I would say, "Hi, I'm Dave. This is Al. We want to invite you to a Bible study that we're starting. It's in somebody's home. It's very casual. You don't have to get dressed up. I would like, you know." And so we got to this next house, and I said, "Okay, Al, this is your turn. I want you to handle this one." So we knock on the door, and a young girl comes to the door, a teenage girl comes to the door, and Al says, "Hi, I'm Dave, this is Al, and we're having a Bible study, and you don't have to wear anything." Thankfully, back then, the police would come now, I'm sure. We'd be in big trouble. I'd be on a list or something, you know. But thankfully, the girl laughed, and we all have laughed over that for years. But with Al, and I told the story of how in 1980, through a gospel song by Don Francisco called "He's Alive," Al heard about the grace of God and realized when he heard the story of Peter that Jesus is alive and that he's forgiven and that heaven's gates are open wide. And his whole life changed in 1980. So we enjoyed the stories yesterday. There were so many about how he has touched so many lives. This man of manual labor, he would go and do so many things and fix things and do things in people's homes. So much had he done things for the Lord and for so many other people. And the funny thing is, you know, in the last couple years of his life, he somehow got this gig driving and working in the movie business, okay? So he's been working for the movie companies in Pittsburgh. He drives and he delivers stuff when they set up. And he's been doing it for years, and he's all the big name movies, you know, Will Smith and Tom Hanks. He worked on the Mr. Rogers movie and all the movies and all the people. He's been in this business, and that's not the most spiritual crowd, right? That's not the godliest place to people to be involved in. But those people love Al. Those people, swarms of them, when they found out he had cancer and there was a party for him and they came, and I met some of them yesterday, how Al touched the lives of the people in Hollywood. What the Lord can do with someone who is just willing to serve and open up their heart.